Jazz Notes Podcast, Ben Anderson,
Chandler Holtz,
and it is March 26th, 10 games left in the regular season for the Utah Jazz. As always, find us on Twitter at Chandler Holt KSL, at Ben's Hoops, and read us at KSLSports.com. Also, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, X, Twitter, wherever you are, Threads, find us at KSL Sports. Get all of our coverage there and subscribe to the KSL Sports newsletter. To make sure that you get all the latest info about the Utah Jazz ahead of time and before everybody else. All right, Chandler, what happened over the last 4 weeks? Let me quickly tease what we're going to do. We look at the last four games, excuse me, not the last 4 weeks. Nobody wants to talk about the 3-17 Jazz over the last 4 weeks. We'll look at the last four games. We'll look at what's coming up this week for the Jazz. Of course, we'll look at the standings, give our Jazz grades, and then, as always, we like to answer your mailbag questions, really the fun part of the podcast.
Rough week of basketball, 0-4 week, and every single loss was a double-digit one. Started off with a 119-107 loss to OKC. Chet Holmgren and SGA combined for 66 points. Sexton leads the Jazz with 25. Jazz only trailed by two to start the fourth, but after the first 3 minutes of the fourth, they were down double digits. Next up, a loss to Dallas, 113-97. Luka with 34 in that one. Markkanen returned, put up 21. Utah just makes four of their 33-point attempts in that game. It was a rough shooting night. And then, big loss, 147-119 to Houston. Jalen Green with 41. Again, Sexton with a 20-piece. And then, finally, yesterday, the Jazz lose by 10, 115-105 to the Mavericks. Again, Utah led by one with 10 minutes left in the game. 5 minutes later, they go down double digits.
Yeah, this has just kind of been the storyline of teams allow the Jazz to hang around for the first three quarters because the Jazz are giving effort. And then when they want to end the game, they end the game. Now, that was not the case in Houston. Houston ended the game in the first quarter.
Yes.
They were down, whatever, 20, was it 47, 21, something like that?
26 points.
And that game was over instantly. But, yeah, the last three games, even though they've not been at all enjoyable to watch, which might reveal the grade we're going to give them on the fun factor, if you wanted to paint it in a rosy picture, it's that through the first three quarters, 36 of the 48 minutes have been competitive. But we talked about the last 4 weeks. Jazz are 3-17 in their last 20 games. Like, abysmal, maybe the worst, one of the worst stretches of basketball in Jazz history. I tweeted this out, maybe it was this, about this point last week. Like, this is the worst stretch since the end of the Tyrone Corbin era in Utah. Absolutely horrendous. But, and it's by design, as was the run-in for Tyrone Corbin. We should note that, that it's not like Tyrone Corbin was that bad of a coach. All the talent was stripped off the roster. They were trying to get a top four pick or a top two pick to get either Jabari Parker or Andrew Wiggins. They ended up with Dante Exum. But of the 17 losses, 12 are by double digits, so they're not even competitive at the end of the game. And 8 of those 12, so almost half of the 17 games are by 15 or more, which is really just unwatchable.
Yep.
Bad basketball. And that's what Jazz fans have had to deal with, so my sympathies, if you're a Jazz fan trying to find something to pull out of this, has not been enjoyable to watch. And the last four games were no exception.
No, definitely not. And like you said, by design, we'll talk about the standings a little bit more. But a little preview, it's working in the Jazz's favor. A little bit of weekly news. In the game against Houston, the big loss, Chris Dunn and Jabari Smith were ejected in the beginning of the second quarter for an altercation. Chris Dunn got hit with a two-game suspension. He will miss the Spurs game tomorrow. He missed the Dallas game last night. The Houston also played last night, and Jabari Smith missed that game, but he'll be back for the Rockets' next game.
And which is against?
I'm not sure.
I think it's the Utah Jazz.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Chris Dunn comes back at least Friday's game to play the Rockets.
Yes.
So Chris Dunn, feisty, to say the least. So we will see if that carries over. I suspect he learned his lesson because he's on the veteran minimum, so
yep,
losing money is probably not easy for Chris Dunn the way it might be for some players. But, yeah, they'll be back at it. And I, you know what? I bet that's going to be a decent game. I know Houston's playing really well. The Jazz were embarrassed by Houston
and probably
don't want to be as embarrassed again. They could potentially win that game. I wouldn't expect it, but the Jazz could potentially have a weird mini two-game winning streak if they beat San Antonio tomorrow, which also, you know what, Lowry's resting every other game. It seems like at least that's been the pattern. We'll see if he plays tomorrow. I kind of suspect he doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jazz could easily lose that game to San Antonio as well, as the Phoenix Suns learned pretty tragically, who went 1-3 against the Spurs this season, and it's going to end up putting them in the play-in tournament. Yikes. Yikes. The West is really tough.
But yeah, like you said, the Jazz are going to host San Antonio tomorrow, and then they're going to host the Rockets on Friday, and then last game of the week, in Sacramento on Sunday.
Best case scenario, realistically, like, Jazz could maybe go 2-1.
Yeah.
Very realistic they go 0-3 again.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely probably 1-2. I think they will win one of those home games. Because they're a reasonable home team for the most part. They're not I mean, they're still four games over 500 at home for the season. No, they haven't won a lot since the trade deadline, but they are pretty competitive. And Houston, San Antonio, still vulnerable to losses.
I looked it up earlier today, and I didn't see any news yet, but Wembanyama missed the Spurs last game, so to be determined if he will be here in Salt Lake City tomorrow.
I almost wouldn't be surprised if they just shut him down.
Yeah.
Like, you're not learning anything else from Victor Wembanyama this year. You know what he needs? A point guard.
Yep.
Like, and otherwise, he's going to be a top 20 player next year. He might be a top 20 player already. Could be top 15 or 10 if it all comes together and they have supporting pieces around him.
He may already be the best defender in the NBA, which is crazy.
Yeah, he probably is. He's probably the most impactful defensive player in the NBA.
Yeah. You want to do our Jazz grades right now?
Sure, let's get to it. Yeah, not a whole lot of news or excitement to talk about with the week ahead. So, yeah, we'll do our Jazz grades. We like to look at four different factors for the week: how the veterans played, how the young players played, the standings, and then whether or not it was any fun to watch the team. Let's start with the veterans over the last four games for the Utah Jazz. Lauri Markkanen had probably his third best game of the season and maybe his best game since November yesterday. Yeah. And still only got one field goal attempt in the fourth quarter. Like, dog, you got to get the ball. You got to go get it. You got to go get the ball. I know you don't dribble. You've got to attack switches. You've got to attack Kyrie Irving. Will Hardy even talked about it. Like, if you're on fire, 6 of 9 from three, and you've got a winnable game, go turn into a star.
Yeah.
You've got to be a star. That is your job. But he was good. I mean, he still averaged 27.5 points and 5 rebounds and actually bounced back his shooting a little bit. Still only 41% from the floor, 38 from three, but was good yesterday.
Yeah, and then Colin Sexton, he puts up 25 in the game against OKC and then three straight 20 pieces coming off the bench for some of those games and starting the, some of the others.
Shooting numbers, so-so. I mean, 55% from the floor is great. Three-point shooting, only 30%, not great.
Yeah.
John Collins, heck of a week. Other than getting dunked into oblivion by Anthony Edwards, which unfortunately like has a chance to just be John Collins' legacy. Like, Brian Russell is a good basketball player. His legacy is that Jordan hit the shot over him.
Yeah.
Frederick Weiss was probably a good basketball player. I know that Vince Carter dunked over him in an Olympic game. That was a bad enough dunk that might be what people always associate John Collins with. But it overshadows a week where he averaged 20.7 points, 7.7 rebounds, shot 56% from the floor and 60% from three. He did have the worst plus minus on the team, which is a consistent issue with John Collins. And I keep trying to figure out, like, does he have a role in the NBA? Because he's clearly productive. There's got to be a way to maximize that. I don't know what it is, and really smart coaches in Atlanta and now in Utah haven't figured out how to like really turn it into a thing. But like, there's something there. There's something there. So the veterans played okay, actually.
I think
to wrap this up, the veterans played okay.
I would say maybe like a B.
Yeah, a B. That's good. You only got two games out of Lowry. You only got three games out of John Collins, and they lose a half grade from getting nuked on by, by Anthony Edwards, unfortunately. Okay, young players.
Young players, honestly, kind of a struggle week for the young players.
Maybe the worst week combined for the three young players for the Utah Jazz. And then if you want to throw Walker Kessler in there as well, who had like a couple of okay, but mostly unremarkable outings. Keontae George, 12 points, 4.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds. I like those assist rebound numbers. Again, I think if he can be, you know, 18, 5, and 5 next year, which is not crazy, that's a really good sophomore season. Problem is, I think his legs are gone. I think he had that good little two-game stretch going into the All-Star break. Speaking of Keontae, he came out and had like 8 more games where he was awesome. Lowry got hurt. He was carrying a huge offensive load, and I think it completely killed him. I think it sapped all the energy out of him because over Keontae George's last four games, it actually stretches back further, but he's shooting 27% from the floor and 10% from three on 7 attempts a game. 10% from three on 7 attempts per game, 0 for last night. Yeah, and then Taylor Hendricks, like, all the things that Taylor does are still there.
Yep.
He hits a couple of threes. Length is really enticing on defense. Gets some dunks. You get it. Bryce Sensabaugh's shooting's been atrocious as well. Somehow at his 15% from three is actually better than Keontae George's over the last four games, but also only shooting, 27% from the floor? Like, really, really bad.
Yeah.
Like, it might be a D. Maybe worse.
Yeah, maybe even a D-.
Yeah, I'll give it a D-.
I'm looking at Bryce Sensabaugh's shooting numbers. It looks like tour dates. He has 2 for 9 right here in the first game against OKC, 1 for 7 in the first game against the Mavericks, and didn't get much better after that. So, yeah, I think a D- is pretty good.
D- for the rookies. That's tough. That's not what you wanted to see. Like, the value in these last 15 games of the season was that, like, okay, the rookies are going to get a lot of opportunities, and, like, they just don't have anything left. Like, I just think they're absolutely gassed. I don't think I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of him. Maybe Keontae George can bounce back because he always does this. He gets to this low point and then has a huge game. But, you know, I'm not anticipating another 30-piece from Keontae before the end of the year.
Next up, standings. Again, we're at a point where losses are better for the Jazz than wins are.
A-plus.
Yeah, they go 0-4, so got to be an A. I mean, Jazz fans are hoping that it could be some competitive or at least watchable fun games. Didn't really get that, which we'll talk about here in a sec with Fun Factor. But, yeah, I mean,
Atlanta stuns the Boston Celtics. Atlanta's down 30 in the second quarter. It's like 66-36 or something, 68-38. Storm back, beat the Celtics. I didn't think they were going to catch Atlanta anyways. Like, realistically, there's kind of been a three-win gap this whole season, two wins, or really for the second half of the year. And the Jazz can very easily not win two games the rest of the year. But this, like, actually gives them a little leeway because now there's three games. Atlanta still has to play Detroit, Charlotte, and Washington. I think they've got one more game. Like, atrocious. Portland. Yeah. Not Washington, Portland. Like, Atlanta's going to win at least one of those and get to 33 wins. There's no way the Jazz win four of their last 10 games.
Oh, no.
So there's no way the Jazz catch Atlanta. And then what's really interesting is now Brooklyn is only two wins back of the Jazz. Brooklyn doesn't have their first-round pick this year. Mm-mm. So they don't have any reason to lose games. They're not even tanking. There's like a not 0% chance that Brooklyn wins two more games or three more games and the Jazz and Nets are tied at 30. And then, A, they would split the lottery odds to move up into the top four, which would increase the Jazz by a few percentage points. And then a coin toss would determine who gets the eighth pick and who gets the ninth pick if neither team wins.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Definitely.
So you're no longer watching Atlanta, in my opinion, if you're a Jazz fan. You're only watching what Brooklyn does game in and game out.
So, yeah, standings A.
Hey, you nailed it. 0-4. Yeah.
Next on Fun Factor, polar opposite.
That might be an F.
Yeah, definitely.
That, honestly, I put it on Twitter. I think that first half against Houston might have been the worst first half in Jazz history.
Oh.
They allowed a franchise worst, 84 points.
Mm-hmm.
They were down 26 after the first quarter. There was no semblance of play, rhythm, anything. That was unwatchable. And then, like, everyone's just running layup lines. Detroit or Dallas didn't last night, but they did in Dallas. OKC did. I mean, the whole second half, it's borderline unwatchable. Like, I feel for Jazz fans who are trying to be like, well, I'm married to this team, so I'm going to, thick or thin, I'm going to be there. Good for you, because this is brutal.
Yeah, and it all stems from the defense. There's no reason that the Rockets, who are 35-35, I know they've been on a hot streak, but there's no reason they should be shooting 56% from the floor and 55% from three.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're just, everyone's clowning the Jazz.
Yes.
Like, it's true, like, clowning, embarrassing the Jazz, and the Jazz don't seem to have any solutions, and the Jazz don't look like they're having fun. So, yeah, I think an F, maybe, is that their first F of the season?
Maybe. I think it might be. And honestly, the only saving grace for this Fun Factor grade is Markkanen's 34. That was very fun to watch, but honestly, I can't really point out much else from the week.
Yeah, and even then, it's just kind of not in any meaningful way. Like, again, the first three quarters of the game, and Dallas is sleepwalking. And just says, okay, well, we'll turn around the fourth and win by double digits, and they did, because they had done that two games earlier.
Yep.
And it's exactly what OKC did as well, and I think it's what you're going to see a lot for the rest of the season. So, yeah, F, unfortunately. Not something we wanted to hand out. All right, let's take a break. We will look at the standings real quick, and then we will answer your mailbag questions. Stick around. More Jazz Notes coming up next. Welcome back to the Jazz Notes podcast. Ben Anderson, Chandler Holt. All right, Chandler, again, we talked about the standings a little bit in our grades, so we don't need to hammer it too hard. But 10 games left in the season. Atlanta has 11 games left in the season. Brooklyn only has 10 games left in the season. Those are the teams you're watching right now. Jazz are 29-43. You don't even worry about 43. Losses don't matter. It's just wins at this point. Jazz have 29 wins. Atlanta has 32. No chance the Jazz catch them.
No.
And then Brooklyn has 27. So two wins there for Brooklyn. You need them to make up on the Jazz if you're a Jazz fan to climb up and potentially give the Jazz the eighth pick in the draft or the eighth best odds of winning the lottery, which is not insignificant. The Jazz, if they stay at ninth, have a 4.5% chance of moving up to one, a 4.8% chance of moving up to two, 5.2% chance of moving up to three, and a 5.7% chance of moving up to four. You add those up, it's just over 20%. Like a 1 in 5 chance of already moving up to the top four. If you end up with the eighth worst record in the NBA, you go up to 6% chance moving up to one, 6.3 to two, 6.7 to three, and 7.2 to four. Like, you're up around 26-27%, like a better than 1 in 4 chance that you move up into the top four picks, which in a bad draft, the higher you get, the more excited you're going to be. So there's some hope there, I guess, if you're a Jazz fan. I wouldn't be surprised if these two teams ended up tied by the end of the season.
Yeah, and like you said, the Jazz have the ninth worst record in the NBA right now. The two teams below them are the Brooklyn Nets and the Memphis Grizzlies. They are only 2 games separated from Brooklyn and 5 games separated from Memphis. But interesting thing to point out here, like you said earlier, Brooklyn has games against Washington, Detroit,
Toronto. Chicago. Chicago's okay.
Yeah.
Chicago's not been bad, but they're not great.
But here's the interesting thing. 5 games away from the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies play Detroit twice and San Antonio.
I just don't...
I think that 5 games behind with 10 games is a lot to ask for, but a tie is possible.
A tie is possible. Probably unlikely. But yeah, the nice thing, Brooklyn has the 5th easiest schedule remaining. Jazz have the 6th toughest.
Yep.
If the Jazz don't beat... I know we touched on Houston a little bit on Friday. If the Jazz don't beat San Antonio tomorrow, I don't know if they're going to win a game for the rest of the season.
Oh, yeah.
The rest of the Jazz schedule looks like this. And again, I wrote about it a little bit yesterday in my game, or you can find it at kslsports.com. After San Antonio, you play Houston. Houston's trying to get into the play-in tournament. Like they, how far back are they right now of the Golden State Warriors? It's like a game and a half?
Like maybe even a half game?
Let's see.
Yeah, a half game.
That's it? That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly they're a half game back of the final play-in spot and have a pretty beneficial schedule the rest of the way, right? Like I can pull up their strength schedule meeting. Houston has the 7th most difficult, so that's tough. Golden State has the 6th easiest. But so every game's going to matter. So they're going to come in and bring it to the Jazz on Friday. I don't expect the Jazz to win that game. Then you go at Sacramento. Sacramento's trying to get out of the play-in. Because they're right there with Phoenix and Dallas in that 5-6-7-8 spot in the West, or 6-7-8 spot in the West. Cleveland's trying to hold on to home court advantage in the first round and stay out of the Boston side of the bracket in the East. The Clippers are trying to hold on to a top 4 spot because New Orleans is coming. Golden State, as we mentioned, is trying to stay in the play-in tournament. They're going to try and beat the Jazz. Denver's trying to get the top seed. Houston, again, trying to get into the play-in tournament. At the Clippers, trying to avoid losing home court advantage, and then at the Warriors' last game of the season, might depend whether the Warriors make the postseason or not.
Yep.
Like, the last 9 games of the season, after you play San Antonio, everyone is A, playing well, and B, playing for something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's almost no chance the Jazz win any of those games.
Earlier in the season, you could look at the Houston game as a potential win. Maybe even the Clippers, they had their time struggling, but all these teams are surging at the right time.
So... it's tough.
Yep.
I honestly think if you're trying to catch a Jazz win, get tickets to go see Wemby tomorrow might be your last chance. And you might not even see Wemby tomorrow. So
yeah,
that might be your last chance to get a victory. So this is going to be another tough, 18 days left in the season or so for the Utah Jazz. It's going to be a little bit ugly to close the year, and you're going to have to hope they have some lottery luck or move up in the draft or whatever it is. But okay, that's your standing watch. We said we'd hit on that briefly. Let's get to our mailbag. We always send out this prompt every Tuesday around 11-ish. And then you can respond with your questions. We try to answer in the mailbag. Chandler, what do we have?
First up from Jake Hatch. Is Kenneth Lofton's scoring prowess in the G League level going to translate to the NBA game? Are he and Darius Bazley going to get extended looks from the Jazz down the stretch?
I mean, Kenneth Lofton scored 52 points for the Stars. I don't think he's going to ever score 52 in the NBA. The hard part about Kenneth Lofton is he needs the ball.
Yep.
And nobody gives you the ball in the NBA. You have to be so unique to get 15 shots a game, much less 20, well, you know what I mean, whatever he got with the Stars to get to 52. So, like, the odds that Kenneth Lofton pans out and is anything more than, like, a third-string center is probably really low. The truth is Darius Bazley hasn't stuck in the NBA for a reason also. I think this was a chance to get an extended look at them with the Stars. Maybe one or two of them plays with the G League, with the Summer League this offseason. Like, I don't know if Darius Bazley at this level of his career wants to still play in the Summer League, but if he wants to stick in the NBA, he might have to. And that's kind of what the Jazz do going forward. But I don't think we're going to see them the rest of the season a whole lot. Maybe a game or two, but Will Hardy, I asked him about this specifically yesterday, and he said, I like to give guys big chunks. Like, I like to have young players knowing they're going to play 15 minutes a night for 10 straight games so they can kind of get into the rhythm of what to expect. There's only 10 games left, and you want to see what Johnny Juzang and Micah Potter and Taylor Hendricks and Bryce Sensabaugh, these guys who you're more invested in. So honestly, I kind of don't think we're going to see them a whole lot, if at all.
Yeah, and also, you speaking of unique, Kenneth Lofton gets most of his touches in the post.
Yeah.
And when you look at post players in the NBA today, the only players who are getting numerous post touches of games are the superstars, Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid.
Yeah, right.
I would say, like, the lowest level player who's getting numerous post touches is, like, DeAndre Ayton, maybe.
Yeah, right. Porzingis gets a handful, but Porzingis is great.
Yeah,
but, yeah, you just don't get a lot. It's not how the NBA works anymore. I'm rooting for Kenneth Lofton. Like, cool story, unique guy. I like the weird players in basketball. But I don't think we'll see him this year, and we'll see if they can turn something into the summer and probably be back on the Jazz roster next season at the very least as camp invites and see if they can make the roster.
Yeah, vastly different career path from the guy I'm about to say, but kind of reminds me of Jahlil Okafor, just sort of an outdated player in today's game.
Great touch, really skilled. Ideally, you could like put him at the nail and run some offense through him because he is a very willing passer, but we can say like, yeah, Jokic does it. It's like, well, Jokic is the most unique basketball player of all time. So I don't think Kenneth Lofton is Nikola Jokic, as fun it is to see him score 52 points.
Next up from Dallin Graff, we've seen the Jazz give up over 140 points multiple times this year. Scoring is growing more and more. What's the limit? Will we consistently see 150-plus points scored in games in a few years, or will it come back down to a reasonable level?
It won't ever come back down to like 90 or 80.
Oh, yeah.
The NBA hates that. Nobody wants it. Fans don't want that. And now that you've gotten a taste of 120-point games, you don't want to go that low. But I think 140 is crazy. I don't like these games. I don't like that every night someone's scoring 75, 80 in the first half. It's like, come on, that's crazy. And the NBA even has come out with the officials, and they said, yeah, we're trying to focus on different things to make sure that not everyone's going to the foul line, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we're going to get back down to like the 120s, 110s. And I think that's actually a good pace. I think it's very consumable, and it looks like guys are actually playing on defense. And you may have to even change some rules to benefit the defense to keep it that low, but I think that's where we're headed.
No, I 100% agree. I forget what it was, but earlier in the season, came out that the competition committee was looking at the high number scorings.
And Adam Silver hated the 200-point All-Star game notoriously. Was like embarrassed by it after he had come out and promised it's going to be the most competitive game we've seen. We're bringing the All-Star game back, and it was arguably the worst one they've ever had.
Yep.
He doesn't want that. He recognizes it's become a bit of a circus.
But yeah, get rid of defensive 3-second.
There's a lot of things I would do. Yeah, I would get rid of the 3-second rule. I would get rid of some of the fouls that players were able to spam out just by faking and pump faking over and over. Yeah, there's a couple little things you could do to help.
Next up from Jimbo Slice. Is the rebrand still happening, or are we stuck with the yellow and black forever?
Okay, a little bit of what I've heard. As a little bit of a Jazz insider, I will tell you some things that I've heard. I don't know what is accurate or not, but I will tell you what I've heard, and I've not seen this on the internet before. I've heard mountains are going to be a part of the rebrand. I've heard it's coming next year, and there's not going to be any more yellow. So, I don't know. I haven't seen jerseys. I haven't seen mock-ups. I promise you, like, I'm a little bit blind on this, but I probably have a little bit more knowledge than because I just cover the team and I'm around. I think the mountains are coming back and the yellow is going away. I don't know if it's still black and white. I know Ryan Smith has talked about purple, but that's kind of where I think it's trending. I don't think you're going to see yellow anymore. Jazz fans hated the yellow. I liked it. Jazz fans hated the yellow. And I think you're going to see more mountains along with the Jazz note. So that's what I've heard. Do what you want with it. You can aggregate it, I guess, if you want to. I could be wrong. I'm going to put that out there that, like, this is not 100% confidence level. This is just kind of gathering what I've been able to gather. No, like, strong source. Like, this is the inside person who showed me these. Like, I promise you, that's not happened at all. Just kind of what I've gathered from several people I've talked to of what I kind of think is coming.
Okay.
So
that's big.
We'll see. But I do think a rebrand is coming next year.
Okay.
That's kind of what I feel confident in saying. Like, you're not going to see this look next season.
Yep.
So it's a little bit of a guess, a little bit of informed information, but I have no idea what they look like. Okay.
Follow-up question from Jimbo. How many years into a rebuild before Will Hardy's seat starts to get hot?
I've thought about this. He just has nothing to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the reason the Jazz signed him to a 5-year deal was to, like, let him work through all of this nonsense. And, like, this is a lot of nonsense that the Jazz are dealing with right now. Like, this year, we'll do a big, like, retrospective at the end of the season on, like, was this a good season for the Jazz? Like, I'm kind of trending towards this being a pretty big failure of a year. Like, you are betting so heavily on these draft picks panning out, and this top 10 pick you're getting, and maybe you just trade all of them. Like, I don't know. It's going to take some time before we figure out what actually happened. But because it's so up in the air, like, I don't think you can blame Will Hardy for it. Now, there are potential issues where, like, are the guys not buying in anymore? Does he lose a locker room? I'm not saying he has, but, like, those are things that could crop up. Like, next season, the Jazz do all this losing this year. If it doesn't come back next year when they're expected to start winning, like, that's an issue. Now, here's the thing. He's had two pretty mediocre rosters each of the last 2 years through the first 70 games last year, the first 50 games this year, and had them both at 500. Where, like, Lauri Markkanen was your best player for the first time. This year, like, there's a real argument that Colin Sexton was your second best player. He's never really done that on a good team before. And the Jazz were 500 and weren't even built like a roster that was designed to win. They were just built to feature veterans so they could trade him at the trade deadline. And he's even won and kept those teams competitive. So my guess is not soon for Will Hardy on the hot seat. Because when the Jazz have lost, they've been designed to lose.
Yep.
They are designed to lose every game, and that's what they are doing. After they traded Mike Conley, the design was to lose. They didn't even lose enough after they traded Mike Conley. They were 35 and 36. That's 71 games into the season. That's exactly where we are right now, or before last night's game, and the Jazz were still at 500. They're 13 games under 500 this year, or 12 as of last night before the game was played. Like, this is designed to be awful. This is what they're trying to do, and it's working. Before they stripped this team of any semblance of real basketball players, they were okay. They were competitive. They were in that same conversation as Golden State and the Los Angeles Lakers, who have Stephen Curry and LeBron James. And the Jazz were trying to do it with a bunch of kind of cast-offs. So I think Will Hardy's a good coach.
Yeah.
And I suspect when you give him some real pieces, they'll start winning.
Yeah. Of course, talent can carry coaches and schemes, as shown with some people, maybe like Doc Rivers, some people would say. But I think that given this roster, if you put numerous other coaches in Will Hardy's position, they're not performing as well. They're not winning, what, 15 of 19 games earlier in the season. They're not going on runs like that. So, yeah, I think it would take at least a couple more years before Will Hardy's seat is hot because he needs to have a chance with a good roster.
Yeah. If they went it like all in, like let's say they trade for Trae Young this offseason and, you know, sign Isaiah Hartenstein, they're like, we're making the playoffs this year. Like, this is it. We know, Jazz fans, you put up with this. We're going for it. We're at least going for, like, improvement. And they're worse? Okay, hot seat.
Yeah.
But, like, nothing we've seen from Will Hardy would imply that that would be the case. Nor is anything of the Jazz losing recently his fault.
Yeah.
So, this is all on the front office. This is by design. This is not Will Hardy's design.
Next up, from Cody Ryan. Is Jordan Clarkson the coolest person to have ever lived in Utah?
I thought about this yesterday a little bit, in the sense that, like, the Jazz have not been fun to watch at all. And just kind of having Jordan Clarkson, like, Jordan Clarkson wasn't great. He had 0 for 7 from the floor. They get 5 turnovers. Like, and they're kind of the bad Jordan Clarkson turnovers where he just gets too far into the paint and just throws it to nobody.
Yeah.
And it's a live ball turnover turning into a layup the other direction. But, like, man, they play so much more fun when he's out there. Like, they are just, everyone's engaged. And then on top of it, like, the actual, like, the fashion stuff, the enjoyability of him as a person to talk to. He's been my probably favorite Jazz player I've ever covered. I think it's going to be really hard to beat him in that, in my own personal rankings, as far as just, like, interesting, funny, relaxed, very kind. Like, I really have enjoyed the Jordan Clarkson experience on a personal level. So, yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
he might be one of the coolest people to ever live in Utah. We've had some cool people to come through. But as far as athletes, I'm not sure there's one that's particularly close to Jordan Clarkson, just
yeah.
As far as full well-roundedness of all the cool different aspects of the world. Jordan checks a lot of boxes.
Next up, from Glenn Anderson, some draft questions. If we get lucky and jump up into the top four, who would you want the Jazz to draft? If we stay at the 8-9 range, who do you like? Also, if we did jump into the top four, do you prefer taking the pick or trading the pick?
All right, a lot there.
Yeah.
So my first thought is, well, what do the Jazz need? And I actually want to ask Will Hardy this before the end of the year, so I will try and flesh this out a little bit more. He may not answer the question because that sounds a little bit insulting to his roster. Like, but a prototype of, like, what would you add to this roster if you could to help them? And part of it, I'm like, well, what did they lose? It's like Kelly Olynyk. Not you add Kelly Olynyk, but what Kelly Olynyk was such a connective piece. Like, he was a great passer. He really was a cerebral player. He's really smart. And I think the best passer, best cerebral player in the league or in the draft this year is, like, Nikola Topic, who's going to go top three. So maybe that addresses that question. Or even Reed Sheppard from Kentucky, who had a terrible game that maybe was the only game people watched of him this year at Kentucky. Not a good example of who he actually was all year as a freshman. Now, the problem with Reed Sheppard is he's little, and he plays the same position as Keontae George. So, like,
Yep. Well,
you get a draft, and so does Topic. Topic needs the ball in his hand because he doesn't shoot and, you know, is not a great defensive player. So, like, these like connective tissue guys, which I think are really important and maybe what the Jazz need most, don't actually fit the model all that well. If you think Keontae George is going to be the guy, but maybe you don't crown Keontae George yet and you just kind of keep trying to just draft the best players available. And if Keontae has to play off the ball a little more, or you trade Keontae, like, I guess that's always possible. You just draft the best player available. So outside of the connective tissue, honestly, I just default to size.
Yeah.
And not like Zach Edey, not Donovan Klingon from UConn. Like, no, give me the guys who have great positional size. And both of those guys do. I mean, Cody Williams. Like, give me a big rangy forward from Colorado. Give me Modest Bouzelis in the G League, who's just like 6'10 and really runs the floor well and like has dominated at every other level before he got to the G League and has only been so-so. Everyone thought he was going to be the number one pick this year because it wasn't a very good draft, and then hasn't been. So, like, maybe you just go, I've heard weird things about Ron Holland, like the guy, I don't know, he's a young kid who probably just views the G League as a stepping stone to get to the NBA. I try not to judge people too harshly, but like, Ron Holland has good size. Modest Bouzelis has good size. Cody Williams has pretty good size. Alexander Sarr, if you get him number one overall, has good size. Ryashe, the French kid, the other French kid, seems to have pretty decent size. Like, get a big person and hope the rest falls into place. That's because really skilled little guys have a ceiling.
Yep.
Big guys that you think you can teach, going back to the last really bad draft, 2011 or whatever it was, someone drafted a huge kid out of Greece. Someone drafted a huge kid out of France, and they turned into Giannis Antetokounmpo and Rudy Gobert. It's like, well, yeah, they're huge.
Yep.
And then you taught them the game because they had some semblance of what to do. So my thought is just go draft the biggest player you can, not Zach Edey. Even though I think Zach's fine. Like, draft a tall guy, and then if you want to get a skilled guard, you can draft him at 29 or 31. And we've actually seen a lot of those, like, Marcus Sasser types that, like, come in and are good backups. And you're like, oh, that guy's great. It's like, yeah, you can get him at 29. You don't need to draft him in the top 10. So maybe I wouldn't touch either of the Kentucky kids.
Looking at the Jazz roster and players who they're more or less committed to, you have Keontae George, who is a ball-dominant guard. You have Walker Kessler, maybe the least committed to of the group, I'm about to say, but he's around the rim.
Yep.
And then you have Lauri Markkanen and Taylor Hendricks, who take up the forward spot. And because of that, I kind of like Dalton Knecht from Tennessee.
Okay.
He's a two-guard, 6'6". And I just feel like having just another scoring two-guard, maybe Jordan Clarkson, but a younger version, can maybe come in and improve in areas like defense and other things.
And
like
a much more efficient scorer than Jordan Clarkson. Now, he might just be Bryce Sensabaugh.
True.
Now, he's better. He's a better college player than Bryce Sensabaugh was, but he's also like 22. And it's like, okay, is he good because he's old?
Yep.
So those are all the questions. It's why this draft is so flawed. It's why like there's no guarantees in this draft that any of these guys are stars. Like, everyone has a major red flag along with their game, which is why people don't like it. And look, not all those red flags will pan out, but also some of the green flags won't pan out as well. So some of these guys are not going to make it because the things they can't do are real. And some of these guys are going to really make it who get drafted late because, well, the things that you thought were going to be red flag, they overcame in the NBA and turned into stars. So again, my default would be size.
Yep.
Get big athletic guys. Taylor Hendricks is big and athletic. And like, you can see like, oh, he doesn't know how to play the game at all. And is really effective already. Mm-hmm. Like, already impacts the game. And when he puts it together, it's going to be really good. Lauri Markkanen took a little while, but he's really big and that helps. So that's a benefit and something I would run with if I were the Utah Jazz.
Speaking of Markkanen, next question from James McKinney. Is Lauri Markkanen's skill set and length too unique to warrant a trade? Do you see a world in which the Jazz tank next season to get into the lottery for 25?
We've addressed the tanking thing a little bit.
Yep.
I don't think so, but again, I wouldn't rule it out. If the Jazz are mediocre at the trade deadline and there's a market for whatever veterans are on the roster, including maybe Lowry. I don't think Lowry. I've heard that they are truly invested in him and are going to give him a bunch of money this offseason. They could pull the plug again and just be like, yeah, guys, it's a bad 2 months of basketball, but you're trying to win a title.
Yep.
And if it means you get a number or a high draft pick in a good draft and your odds of moving up and getting Ace Bailey or Cooper Flagg are increased by trading away whatever mid-level veteran at the trade deadline next year versus playing an 83rd game for the play-in tournament for a right to get ousted in the first round, like, the Jazz will do it again.
Yep.
Unfortunately, I know that's not what Jazz fans want to hear, but if that's where they're sitting, they will repeat this process again and again and again, I suspect, until they get the guy that is a real difference maker. So that's the tanking aspect of it. Is Lauri Markkanen's skill set and length too unique to warrant a trade? Here's what I always do, because, I mean, no, it's like he's not a top three player in the NBA. So, like, everyone can be traded if you're not Giannis or Nikola Jokic.
Yeah.
Or Anthony Edwards. Like, yeah, all these, Luka. All these guys are available for trade if the right piece comes along. But what I will say is when you get these kind of like players who were 15th to 30th best players in the NBA, mm-hmm. and I'm always like, oh man, Boston should kick the tires on a Jaylen Brown trade just to see like what's out there. Maybe that could really push him over the top. Almost inevitably, every time I say that, like 2 years pass, and I'm like, wow, good thing they didn't trade Jaylen Brown because they're the best player in the NBA and he's the second best player and he's critical.
Yep.
He's absolutely essential to everything they do. So that's probably where I'd put Lowry, which is like, he's not too unique to warrant a trade. You could probably explore it. But 2 years from now, like, let's say you hit on a couple of these draft picks, you're so happy to have Lowry Markkanen on the roster. You know, like, here's the thing. Look at Cleveland right now. Do you know what they're missing? Lowry Markkanen. Like, the Evan Mobley's okay. Darius Garland's okay. Donovan's fabulous. They've got some decent role players. Like, they need a second all-star who's 7 feet tall who shoots the heck out of the ball.
Yep.
Okay, well, they lost Lowry Markkanen. Like, they might be better with Lowry than Evan Mobley. You know, and they kind of gambled that, like, well, Evan's going to be the star, but they gave up on the a little bit more proven piece who was having the best year of his career. So my thought is, no, he's not too unique to trade, and even then I would probably, like, I would rather trade Lowry a year too late than a year too early.
Yes.
And I young players, Ochai Agbaji, you traded him a year early. That was smart because I'm not sure Ochai is an NBA player. Lowry, I would rather wait a little bit too long and say, well, we took a little bit of a hit on trading him versus, oh, man, I really wish we had Lowry Markkanen. And this is, you know, the Jazz front office speaking. So that's how I would approach it. Anything else?
I think that's it.
Okay. We appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, subscribe, like the podcast, leave a review. But really, you can see it in every article I write, a link to the Jazz Notes newsletter. Sign up for it. Get this delivered to your email, phone, tablet, whatever you have early every Tuesday. We appreciate you guys listening. Find us on Twitter at Chandler Holt KSL. Find me at Ben's Hoops. Read us at KSLSports.com. We'll be back again next Tuesday.